years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Coast to coast, starting with a real meteorologist, Dr. Dave. All right, it's 7 minutes past the hour, 7 minutes past the hour with Walter M. Sterling, Every Damn Night, a national live radio show. Good evening. It's very exciting to be with you. Well, some of you. Well, not really you, but here we are. My gosh, it's the beginning of spring, and through much of the Midwest today, it was in the 20s, and in other parts of the Midwest, it was snowing. Really, the weather's been crappy, and it's been a crappy winter, and I'm sick of it, and I know you are sick of it, and then many of our kids are on spring break. Disaster. Nothing good happens on spring break. Think of spring break as always being 2:15 in the morning. 24 hours a day, it's 2:15 in the morning. That's what happens. That's how everything feels. Now, you and I are obsessed with one thought that we never discuss. If you're a man in America, you're obsessed with the Roman Empire. Every day you think about the Roman Empire at least once. Maybe your gay fantasies, maybe your construction or concrete fantasies, your gladiator fantasies, wanting to wear certain uniforms, all of that. But the other thing you and I think about every day, at least for a nanosecond, no, not about her, at least for a nanosecond, is what happens after we die? What actually happens after we die? There are many religious dogmas that say nothing. Nothing happens. That's it. That's the end of life. Others believe it's just the beginning of our contact with the universe. Or if you're Shirley MacLaine, for years you'd send out literature that said you can take a course. And it said, take this course, $350 for a weekend to discover your higher self. But then if you read the fine print below, it said no checks. So I guess Shirley was afraid of our lower selves. What happens after we die? There are people who have died and have come back, technically medically died, but they've come back and they say, this is what happened to me. This is what hell was like. This is what heaven was like. Their descriptions and the things they say are surprisingly similar about the good news of heaven. There are a small number of people who have dedicated their lives to gathering up the stories of life after death, gathering up the stories of what happens after we die. And these people have always fascinated me, and I have looked for the right person to talk to us about this, someone who is a complete quack, and I have found him. And coming up in 7 minutes, you and I are going to talk to a gentleman who has devoted his life and filmed 200 people using hypnosis, meditation, or mediumship to hear what they have to say about what happened after they medically died and then awoke, came back, and what they saw, what they heard, what they learned. This is not a religious conversation. Lord knows I need ratings. I can't have a religious conversation. This is a series of testimony. This is testimony about what these people saw after they died. That's coming up in 6 minutes on Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm William Devane.
Back in 1951 in Cleveland, we coined a phrase that became the biggest pop musical era in the world. The words rock and roll.
Gang, are you ready? Here we go.
Hey,
Let it out. Let it out. This is how you feel. I know how you feel. You're alone in the 18-wheeler, alone in the car. Nobody will know. The promise of American radio brought to life right now. Oh, it's the Walter Sterling Show. It must be that Walter Sterling guy. Who else would do this? All right, ready? 2, 3, 4. Pat Walsh would never do this. Never. Dom Giordano would never do this. Clay and Buck, no sense of humor. Hey, Buck, do you agree with me? Yeah, Clay, I agree with you. Now, next time, next week, I expect you to have a kazoo and to play along.
This is the sad story of Eleanor Jones. Eleanor is spending a few days at the hospital. She really didn't intend to come to the hospital, but just a few days ago, something happened. Eleanor decided to clean the top of the cupboards. There was a stepladder in the basement, but Eleanor just didn't want to take the trouble. Careful, Eleanor, careful.
Eleanor
has a chance for some extra reading. What are you reading, Eleanor? Yes, Eleanor has learned her lesson. But how about you? Do you know how to play safe in the kitchen? One of the first things to remember is to arrange your kitchen as conveniently and as efficiently as possible. In this way, you avoid those extra steps which cause fatigue and thus reduce the possibility of an accident. Store the things you use near the place you intend to use them. And by all means, store poisons, extra matches, and other dangerous items far above the reach of children. Keep those cupboard doors closed. A bump on the head probably won't send you to the hospital, but it will be painful just the same. Small accidents will happen occasionally, but don't let them become major ones. Wipe up that grease spot immediately before you have a chance to forget about it.
Walter M. Sterling, this is the promise of American radio. This is why the National Association of Broadcasters are lobbying Congress as we speak to maintain AM radio in the car, allowing moments exactly like this to continue.
I'm going to go eat some chicken parm.
Chicken parm?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, coming up, I will share with you a secret chicken parm recipe. And in about 4 minutes on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Shoplifting a child. The people at Walmart. Later, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, Dan and Becky Gaffney explain how cleaning our big house full of children, cleaning it somehow is making it messier. And my wife lost the nose piece to her super nasal vacuum machine.
Is this something you really need to tell people?
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night. Yes, it is.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain how taking the wrong apartment can put you in the crosshairs of a mob head. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Economic development on steroids. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
All right, good evening, Sterling Every Damn Night. Walter M. Sterling live with Richard Martini, who has filmed 200 people using hypnosis, meditation, mediumship, and they're saying the same things, similar things about the afterlife. He's compared results of thousands of cases of people who have passed away medically and then come back. and they have their stories and their tales of the afterlife. Richard Martini, I know you don't do this, and therefore I am grateful that you have chosen to be on Sterling every damn night. Thank you very, very much.
Well, Walter, I'm honored to be here. Let me put it that way. I mean, what a wonderful thing. You've got a wonderful show. And I mean, the fact that you reach so many people, I'm flattered to even be considered, to be honestly, because, you know, I'm just a guy out in Santa Monica. I was a filmmaker for many years. My best friend died in my arms.
Stop. I don't want you to waste your time with your bio. What I want you to
good.
Do. Okay, I want you, you're qualified, sir. What I want you to do, Richard Martini, is it says you've said that the stories of people telling their afterlife stories are remarkably similar, which is shocking to me.
That's
consistent.
Right.
It's shocking to me. Please tell me how they are consistent.
Well, if you look at the University of Virginia has a medical lab called DOPS, Department of Perceptual Studies, and these guys have been studying how consciousness is outside the brain, and they've been doing that for years. Data has to be consistent and reproducible to become data. In Dr. Grayson's book, After, he talks about the idea that if you ask subjects the same questions, you can subjective results can become objective data if they are asked the same questions. So that's what I do. I've been filming people under hypnosis. I've done, like I say, 200 sessions, half without hypnosis. The hypnosis sessions are 4 to 6 hours, usually with a Michael Newton trained licensed hypnotherapist. I've been working with mediums who work with law enforcement for the past 10 years, Jennifer Schaefer. And also I've been using guided meditation, which would show a lot of people think hypnosis is biased because, you know, people want to remember a past life, whatever. But I've been showing how scientists, doctors, clergy can use a simple guided meditation and talk to people off stage, if we want to call it that. And that is, so the results are consistent. And I've been doing this for 15 years and across the board. So it's not just people under hypnosis, not just people with guided meditations, and it's not just mediums. But when I use a medium, I use them like a cell phone. And I say,
Richard,
look, I want to talk
but
to
Richard.
Yeah.
But
go
Richard.
Ahead.
What
Walter?
What are the consistent results? I don't question your methodology.
No, it's important to tell you at least the premise, okay? And I was going to tell you, my friend died in my arms, and then she started visiting me, and then she started visiting members of my family. I was a skeptic until people that I know and love were saying, hey, we're seeing Luana Anders in our living room. So that made me realize something's happening, and if she can come and visit me, how do I visit her? That's when I got into the research. Now, what do people say consistently? They say that we exist before coming on stage, that we plan our lifetimes, as weird as that sounds, with guides and teachers and council members before we even get on stage. And then once we're on stage, we have filters that block our awareness. And Dr. Grayson's book, After, talks about those filters. I've talked at UVA about the filters. Everybody has them. Some children don't until about the age of 8. They recall previous lifetimes. They see people in the room that others cannot. Conversely, elderly people lose those filters, something called terminal lucidity. If you look it up, you'll see that people with dementia spontaneously remember everything. Why? It's because the filters have died. So when you just start there, how do I bypass the filters? People say the consistent same things. I chose this journey, as difficult as that sounds. I can recall previous lifetimes. Dr. Tucker's book at UVA has 2,500 historically accurate reincarnation case studies. So he's been doing the work to outline. I'm a filmmaker. I've been filming people accessing this information, so it's a different paradigm. But in terms of what Tucker's been doing, he's been doing it in clinical case studies. So that's where the data comes in. Footage and data share something in common. They don't change just because people don't like it. Either the data's consistent. I said that like I'm from the East Coast.
The message is that you're getting about life after death are these happy messages, Is heaven a good thing? Is there a consistency to what heaven is like?
Yes. The consistency is that people don't use the term heaven. They use the term home. When they talk about leaving a planet, they talk about returning home. What's also consistent is the idea of something negative happening is rare. 1-3% of near-death experiences experience something negative. People assume it's going to be a 50-50 thing. Ah, if I was good, I went here. People don't talk about going to heaven. They talk about going home. Interesting, in the NDE data, Grayson's data, 85% of the people who have a near-death experience talk about meeting either Source or God, and they talk about indescribable love, unconditional love, and non-judgmental acceptance. Those are the same terms I'm hearing. So people talk about being home, and I ask, what's it like? Well, I'm experiencing indescribable joy. I can create things just with my thought. I can create a sporting event. I can bike ride. I can surf. I can play golf. I can do whatever I want. It's shocking what they say because it's consistent. That's the weird part. After 15 years of doing this, I'm as shocked as you are, Walter.
No, I'm not shocked, Richard Martini. I'm not shocked at all because it makes total sense. Yeah, I believe that if people really listened to their 1- and 2-year-olds, they would
hear
a lot of this information. At 2 years of age, my oldest daughter said to us one day, she said, you have to remember, I chose this family. I could have chosen a different family. I chose you. And then, then when she was like 4, she's sitting there at twilight, which I thought was significant. She was sitting there at twilight, and she starts speaking like a French chanteuse.
Oh, my gosh.
Mimicking holding a cigarette holder. She'd never seen cigarettes, and she never had heard French. But
she
starts
speaking,
mimicking a French chanteuse. Now,
I tell people to ask your kids, toddlers, did you choose us or did we choose you? It's a very simple, non-denominational question. So,
it's a great question.
But that's great. I mean, they usually forget it about age 8. Has she ever accessed this since then? Your daughter?
No, she would only use that as revenge. Now, listen, now she'd use it. She's 22 now. It'd be all revenge. Listen, Richard Martini, I'm going to have you back on again because I wanted to get a taste of who you were and how articulate you are. And because you live in L.A., you keep telling me you're a filmmaker. Nobody on the East Coast cares. You just
that's true. That's very good.
No,
but that's how I fell into it, as a documentary guy. So
no,
I do have
fine.
Documentaries you can find. Say, there you
that's
go.
That's fine. All right. Richard Martini, you're going to be on again. This was great information. Fascinating story, and I thank you for being on Sterling every damn night. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. We have Mateus Boom Boom in Hollywood with his review of the worst movie we've ever heard described ever. Whoever said Snow White would be a disaster, it was a disaster. Plus, JB Bakery will give us an exciting, zesty new recipe. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by history buffs.
When was America last great?
For me, I would say the turning point for our country was 1913, when we passed the 17th Amendment.
Boom, boom, Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
Well, there you are, Mateus. The low point of your career, Sterling every damn night. How does it feel? How does it feel to be on this show right now?
Well, I just found out by listening that I may have chosen to be on this show in a previous life. And I think that's really cool because I probably did that in a few previous lives. So I feel pretty great about it. It's a comfortable 63 degrees over here in Culver City, California. And we're reeling from the amazingly low box office of Snow White this weekend at the movie.
Well, don't confuse a past life experience with a blackout.
Well, I shouldn't. And I have to say that some of the finest kazoo playing I've heard in many years since Yitram used to play his... Not, well, because you remember Yitram? He used to play his kazoo on Larry King's show, emanating from three floors below Larry King's studio. That was the last time kazoo was great. And I think you brought the kazoo back to the forefront. It was fabulous.
Do you think they'd like me to play the kazoo at Music at a Tiny Desk? Do you think that would be on demand there, public radio, to play the kazoo at the Tiny Desk? What a pretentious pile of crap that is. When I first... And now here's some jazz from the Cleveland Orchestra from a tiny desk. What? What the hell are you talking about from a tiny desk? Yeah.
Having been an NPR announcer in the past, I can tell you that they all want us to sound like we're on Valium.
Well, I talked to a woman named Holly who worked at KQED in San Francisco, a newscaster who was pretty funny off the air. And I said to her, Holly, why do you all talk like this? And she said, oh, they tell us to. I said, what? She said, no, they actually believe the audience is stupid, and they tell us to speak slowly so that they understand us.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I have to say, in all honesty, though, I had a very arsenine voice, which is a very high goose-like voice, and the guys I worked with at NPR helped me bring it lower and closer to the microphone. So I did learn some values there. But I have known many of these announcers that sound like you're at a golf match.
Oh, that would be picking up the pace. If they were at a golf match, it would be much faster than that. Now, this the good news is you're not alone for once. And like that last movie you hated, you were pretty much alone on that. But this one is universal appeal of hatred. Please go ahead. The stage is yours.
Snow White cost $209 million, and this weekend it managed to make $44.3 million domestically, $87.3 million from 51 international box office markets. That's still way lower than $209 million, and I'll say that I think it's going to drop off precipitously in the coming weeks. Right now, it's the number one movie in the country, but it can't possibly last. And the basic problem is that you have a great property, Snow White, which you shouldn't have messed with, and they try to update it and make it better, and it doesn't. The moderns they write pale in comparison to the original music that's also featured in the movie, three songs from the animated cartoon from 1937. But the new ones are fetid. They're fetid songs, one of which is called The Princess Problem, which accurately describes the problem with Snow White. But I'd actually like to talk about a movie that is not being very much liked and I thought was great, Walter. And that is the new Robert De Niro movie from Warner Brothers, The Alto Knights. The Alto Knights is the name of a bar in New York where a lot of the gangsters would meet. And this is a gangster movie about the friendship and later rivalry between two of the most notorious crime bosses in New York City, Frank Costello and Vito Genovese. And the picture opens in the 50s with a hit ordered by Genovese that nicks but misses Costello. And from that point forward, Costello, who's played by Robert De Niro, relates in flashback the rise from their childhood, what transpired after the hit on his life. But get this, Genovese is also played by Nero, and so he's doing two roles together. And I think it's fabulous to watch him do this, because people are saying this is a campy movie and there's too much De Niro, but I don't know about you. I think a lot of people that like De Niro movies are because he has such a famous, well-known face. He's been in a lot of great films. He's been in crappy movies too, but he has a magnetic face that people like to watch. And so if you get to watch him do two different roles in the same movie, I think you're coming out ahead. I think he's a good actor. Now, on the political scale, he may have opinions that have nothing to do with acting. But as an actor, he's probably one of the best actors we've seen, going way back to 1963 when he was in Brian De Palma's The Wedding Party. This is a really great showcase for him. You know who also is in this is Deborah Messing. You know her from Will and Grace. She's outstanding as Bobby Costello. And I was totally engaged with this movie. Daniel Spinotti photographed it. He made L.A. Confidential. And it's directed by one of the best directors in the business and somebody who knows how to tell a story. And I think that that just really makes it work. Barry Levinson. It may be Barry Levinson's best movie since Bugsy back in 1991 with Warren Beatty and Annette Bening. So, yes, it's a gangster movie, but it's beautiful to watch. Of course, there's a little gangster violence, but I loved it. I like watching De Niro, and I think it's great, and I think many of my colleagues are poo-pooing it or don't like it, and I think, you know, you ought to try it out. It's a great movie to see this weekend, and the name of the movie is The Alto Knights, Knights like Knight in Shining Armor.
How do you spell Alto?
A-L-T-O.
Okay, so it's as we would have suspected. I believe everything you just said because there's a point at which it's okay to just appreciate artistry. And Robert De Niro is the last of that school. Marlon Brando passed away. Who just passed away? Why is that blanking in my brain? The great actor.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, so Gene Hackman just passed away. These great actors are passing away. The people from that famous school in the 50s are leaving us, and he's one of the last ones. So just to go to watch him do two roles is probably a damn good acting lesson.
Absolutely. He looks much more like Vito Genovese than he does Frank Costello, but I don't care about that detail. I care about watching him have conversations with himself, because even people who are not technically minded about the movies know that he can't obviously be doing this at the same time, so he has to do one part in advance of the other part, and he has to sit there and look like they're actually having a conversation. So that takes about a lot of the brain muscle to memorize exactly when you need to react to something that you're not actually saying at that moment.
I was also just thinking about what you were saying about the Disney movie and how much it cost to make, over $200 million versus what the original would have cost to make, and when the original was so much better. And I thought, why was that? You know why that is? Because every time in the late 20s and early 30s that Walt Disney made a movie, he put his house up. He had to mortgage his company and his soul to make every one of those cartoons and to hit payroll every time. Those movies had to work or his company would have collapsed. Every one of those movies had to be a hit or else there would have been no next movie. Sometimes that can be a great motivation, plus the fact that, oh my gosh, the man was obviously born a genius. The man was born with pure genius. And these movies are born out of a committee.
Yep. Right. What worked before? Let's try it again. Nothing new, nothing original. You know, but Disney proved they could make a good movie last year. The Young Woman in the Sea, about the first girl to swim across the English Channel. It was female empowerment in a positive way without feeling lectury, and it was a thoroughly entertaining movie. They can make a new movie, but they keep falling back into this hell of trying to make something old new, and it doesn't work because old things are incongruous with new things, as this new movie, Snow White, proves clearly.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Shoplifting a child. the people at Walmart. Later, Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, Dan and Becky Gaffney explain how cleaning our big house full of children, cleaning it somehow is making it messier. And my wife lost the nose piece to her super nasal vacuum machine.
Is this something you really need to tell people?
Coming up on Sterling every damn night. Yes, it is.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain how taking the wrong apartment can put you in the crosshairs of a mob hit. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Economic development on steroids. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night. It's Sterling Every Damn Night. Ah!
Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
I was so happy seeing all the kids working with you, cleaning the house, organizing, throwing out stuff. But somehow, the cleaning has made the house a complete wreck.
This is what spring cleaning does. It's spring. Spring has sprung, and we have to pull everything out of every cabinet and every closet and every drawer and every cubby. Because I don't know what we have and what we don't need.
But it looks worse after the cleaning.
Okay, so here's how this happens. I have to get everything out so that I can go through it. Like if we're going through laundry because I'm doing a big giveaway, which I need to do multiple times a year in our house. I just got rid of 14 bags of stuff. Yesterday, I put 7 boxes of stuff on the street just to give away for free. It gets crazy. And I don't even feel like we go out and buy tons of things. I feel like they just kind of are attracted to us, the law of attraction. We sit there and things come to us or something, and you've got to get rid of them. So they have to come out of the closet so that you can clean the closet.
We have 8 kids and a big old house. That's why we're on the Sterling on Sunday show, sharing this with you.
And let me just clarify, I use the word closet, but basically any piece of furniture that we have has to have storage in it or be like a storage cabinet because we don't have built-in closets.
My method of cleaning would be get a dumpster, throw it all in and be done. But we have piles. There are piles in the kitchen, piles in the dining room.
Okay.
Piles.
I'm sorry, too. Let me just go here. Getting a dumpster and throwing it all out, it's like there's stuff that we don't need. It's not. The kids grow. They need different things. They do different stuff. It's not like it's just trash in the house. It's our things.
Part 2 of our report. You've heard radio commercials for a particular product that is like a super vacuum for your nose. Well, the thing costs $99.
Worth it.
There you go. Bought it. You love it, right?
I absolutely love it. I am allergic to, you know, the air. So I have a lot of stuffiness all the time, lots of nasal problems, and I am in love with this thing.
It's like a neti pot, only it's powered. So it blows liquid through one nostril and sucks it out of the other one.
Okay, let me just say, too, that I had to resort to my neti pot this morning because my little silicone nose piece is missing. Like, why did anyone have to touch my little silicone nose piece?
You can't use it without that?
No, you can't use it. How are you going to stick it in your nose? It's got to, like, create suction. I'm not going to just stick the machine up there.
I bet it got lost in all of the cleaning.
It did not, because it's in my bathroom in a little basket that it doesn't leave. I know how it got lost, and it's my stupidity for putting it in a basket that it could fall through the hole of. It's on a baker's rack kind of shelf, so it fell through that, too.
All right, well, first world problems from the Gaffney household here in beautiful Delaware.
I just ordered one online, so it'll be here, and I'll be sucking my nostrils out happily tomorrow.
You can order just the little piece?
I just ordered the little piece.
Consumer review? Worth it.
Absolutely.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Inspired by women and shoes.
Men I may not know, but shoes I know.
I have this little problem. Expensive footwear.
I spent $40,000 on shoes, and I have no place to live. I will literally be the old woman who lived in her shoes.
Feel the dough. eat the dough. JV Bakery, Salida and Steve, Sterling and
Steve,
and
fathered by Father Jim Drucker. Father Jim Drucker, who's a Catholic priest in Philadelphia, who is mooching at the JB Bakery. How many times did he come in this week to steal food?
He was in today, Walter.
And what did
just
he steal?
One time.
Why does it take you? Why did he steal? And why does it take you so long to answer?
Father Drucker, he's great. He's checking up on the bakery. He's greeting the guests. And he's definitely checking out the coffee, making sure it's fresh, and making sure that my employees are making him fresh coffee when he comes in. That's for sure.
What is his favorite dessert?
He loves the chocolate chip cookies, the big ones. They're like, these cookies are like 5 inches big, maybe 6 inches. They're really big. And for somehow, he gets a whole box full of them, so it lasts him all week. So he only has to come in once a week, which is great.
Now, Selena, can you tell us about spring break with Father Drucker on the line?
I can tell you about spring break. The most memorable thing, I've got the worst sunburn in my life. I didn't realize that joint pain was actually something that you could have as a result of sunburn. And I ended up staying in Miami for an extra day. And I did get to enjoy that extra day because I was not going to be able to walk to the flight with the sunburn. So I did have a really good spring break and just enjoyed the nice weather on the beach.
All right. So I'm living in shock, and we'll talk more about this later, probably Wednesday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I really have no idea what I'm doing. And now, Dr. Dave's weather.
Come and listen to my story about a man named Walter, a radio genius who'd seldom falter. Then one day he was hanging round the station when his bosses decided to unleash him on the nation.
Corporate, you know, Brooks Brothers suits, club ties.
Next thing you know, young Walter's VP. They gave him an office in New York City. But things didn't turn out exactly quite right. Now he's back on the radio every damn night. Philadelphia, you know, cheese steaks, Eagles fans.
It's Sterling every damn night.
Look at you. My gosh, it's Sterling every damn night. And if you want to hear this every damn night and you don't live within the sound of my voice, I'm on every night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. And you can hear it on the Odyssey app, the Odyssey radio app, WPHT. Odyssey. You're going to spell it wrong. You're going to spell it like that horrible sitcom on ABC about the boat, the doctor on the boat with Don Johnson and Pacey. From Dawson's Creek, Pacey from Dawson's Creek, and Don Johnson. It is the worst show. Just horrible. Cheesy sets. It makes the Love Boat look like a really high production. I can't even believe how this got into production. It's about a doctor on a cruise ship, the medical staff on a cruise ship. Well, congratulations. Cruise ships don't have medical staffs. They may have a doctor and a nurse. That's it. They cannot perform complex surgery. Every episode of Odyssey features a very complicated surgery on a cruise ship. Now, let's just think that through. No, really think it through. The ship is always moving. It's always moving. Now, is the surgical room on a track where it can float, move around, stay level? Does it have one of those things that makes it stay level? What's that called? Oh, yeah, a gyroscope. Is the operating room on a giant gyroscope? Is it under the pyramids? And by the way, did you hear about that this week? It seems that underneath the pyramids of Giza, they discovered columns dug underneath that go down for hundreds of feet, like 1,000 feet down. Six columns that are metal, concrete columns that are wrapped in a coil right underneath the pyramid, making it an electrical charge thing. I have always believed, and I'm a talk show host, so I have the authority to say these things, and therefore I'm right. You ready? I have never believed that after 100 years of us smart people trying to figure out how they built the pyramids, and we could not agree on how they built the pyramids, we cannot come to the conclusion of how they built the pyramids. We have AI. We've had Tesla, Einstein, brilliant math, amazing computers. None of these things could agree on how the pyramids were built. Were those blocks, in fact, not 4-ton blocks, mined far away? No. Or were they in fact, poured concrete, some sort of composition rock, poured into a mold and poured in place, and so hard and so good that we think that they were quarried, that they were quarried rock, but they weren't. They were, in fact, concrete of their day. What? I think that the pyramids were built 10,000 years ago, and because they are four-ton concrete blocks, they could survive a flood and wind and all of that, and these are 10,000 years old. And what the Egyptians did is they found them, they were amazed by them as we are, and then they put their signature on it, signed their names, took turns drawing pictures on it, gave them a religious significance, said these were ways for their kings, their pharaohs, to get to the afterlife. That's what I think. You know, when I see Zaghi Hawass there, running around, denying everybody the right to test it, photograph it, put sound in it, to put sonograms in it, when he's denying every single type of science, making it impossible for anybody to speculate on what it was or to truly test any of the theories that are beyond the fact that my ancestors built these. I'll never forget the episode of some National Geographic nonsense where we see Zaghi Hawass, the head of Egyptian antiquities, the guy in the bomber jacket with the hat, you know, always sweating, always angry, the angriest man who ever lived, hates Graham Hancock, that guy. I'll never forget the episode where we see him kneeling in one of the alleys inside one of the pyramids, hugging the giant block and saying this: I can feel the hands of my ancestors on this stone. What science is that? The Psychic Friend Network there, Zaghi Hawass? Is that the Psychic Friend Net? That's your scientific method? You can feel your ancestors holding these rocks from 4,000 years ago? But to me, the tell that the dynastic period of Egypt did not build those pyramids is what the last pharaoh of Egypt said, Cleopatra. One of Cleopatra's missions, the last pharaoh of Egypt, one of Cleopatra's missions, she told her minions, find out who built these and how did they do it. What? She was a pharaoh, a queen. She was a queen of the kingdom. And she's looking around going, would you please find out who built these and how they built them? How did they build them? Well, wouldn't that knowledge have been passed down from kingdom to kingdom, from reign to reign, from ruler to ruler? Wouldn't that knowledge have been sort of kept, maybe be valuable? Maybe somebody made a note? Because remember, the thing that was most interesting is, first of all, there were nobody was buried in them. They can't find any tombs. And secondly, there's no real written record of how they did all of this. Now, they may have built other things. They may have built things in the Valley of the Kings. That's where there are burials. That's where there's more complex hieroglyphics. That's where they had that helicopter. But they didn't build those pyramids, and they didn't build the Sphinx. It was about 10,000 years ago. You and I will talk to Ross Coulthart of News Nation on Tuesday. Ross Coulthart of News Nation and I talk every Tuesday and Thursday on Sterling Every Damn Night. And he has far more elaborate and exciting theories about this. All right. Very exciting. Coming up, we're going to talk about what we actually need to talk about. The criminals who run the toll system in America. And why is it so damn hard to buy a car? Sterling Every Damn Night.
The virus that came from China, you remember something called COVID? 5 years ago, almost this exact day, we lost an economic engine in the wonderful city of Columbus, Ohio. A gentleman's club called Sirens, which was famous, by the way, for Stormy Daniels getting arrested at it. It's been closed now for 5 years, and the new owners, they have come in, and it is going to be a completely different business. Several million dollars have gone into the renovation, according to Greg Flagg, executive director of The Excellence Group. A consultant for the strip club industry who worked with Siren's owner, Michael Sherrick, to open the club. We gutted it, according to Flagg. It was down to bare walls, no floors, no ceilings, no stripper poles. Club has been built into a jungle gym of gyration. As this club reopens in just a matter of weeks, people from all over Columbus and Ohio and Gentlemen's Club enthusiasts are traveling for this big occasion. They promise the best-looking women in Ohio. Have you ever been to Ohio? Unless you're at Ohio State University. Finding a bunch of willowy dancers seems like it could be quite the project. But who am I? What do I know? Of course, I live in Michigan, so we hate Ohio. So take it as you want. From the renovated champagne room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Shoplifting a child. the people at Walmart later. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain how taking the wrong apartment can put you in the crosshairs of a mob hit. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Now, John.
You might not have ever even kissed a guy, but you just know on some deep level that you don't want to for one reason or another. Well, that reason might be that you're a lesbian.
Look at you. Look at you. Look what life has done to you, that you're in this position. We're listening to Sterling every damn night on a Sunday night. Why are you doing that, Keith Mortensen? Why? It's because this is where we meet. Those of us who would rather spend quality time alone. To us, quality time is the time we get alone. This does not mean that we do not like and love other people. It means that as an introvert, you and I need time to be alone. That's how we recharge. The annoying and loud thing about extroverts is that they're extroverts. They can't shut up long enough to listen to us to understand what it is that we go through. When I leave a party long before an extrovert, when I leave a meeting long before anybody else, it's not that I don't like the meeting. It's not that I don't like the party. It's that, in fact, I like them all just fine. But if I stay any longer, I'm going to lose it. On some level, I'll either stop paying attention or, worst case, I'll get annoyed. And if I get annoyed, you won't want to be with me. You won't tell me anything. I won't experience anything with you. Extroverts need to be with other people to recharge. They get very itchy and antsy. Oh, I don't want to be alone. I can't stand to be alone. I hate being alone. And the degree to which they hate to be alone determines how much of an extrovert they are. It's not how loud they are and how many other people they hang with. That isn't what makes them an extrovert. It's how much they hate to be alone and how long they can stand being alone. You and I, we could be alone for weeks. I just had the best gift from my current wife. Or she says, your only wife. She was in New York for a week at her sister's place. And she left like on Sunday. And I said, I'll call you Thursday. You what? Yeah, I'll around Thursday, I'll start missing you. Well, what? What's wrong with you? Too many of our conversations end with her saying, what's wrong with you, Walter? What is wrong with you? And the answer is nothing. But when I get a week alone without my wife, that means that I have my 13-year-old with me in the house alone. She goes to school. She's in school on a good day from 8:30 in the morning till 2:45. On many days, it's 9 in the morning till 2:45, but that's a different conversation. I get six and a half hours alone every day when my wife's out of town. What does that mean? Gentlemen, see if this makes any sense to you. What that means is that nobody questions my work. There's no one questioning my work. I can clean things the way I want. I can repair things the way I want. When she's away, I do a lot of painting. We have we're in a rental house, and a lot of things chip. A lot of paint chips. It's a 100-year-old house. A lot of things chip. Like the radiator covers, the paint chips off of that. There was an ugly patch on the vent above the stove. At first, I thought it was dirt. It wasn't dirt. Then I realized it was rust. It wasn't really rust, and I painted it over. I could have never done that when she was home. Oh, what smells like that? Something smells. Why does something smell? And then when she realized what it was that smelled, she would have come and critiqued my painting.
We cannot believe you, Phil! How could you?
What is happening? What did I do?
Are you serious? You are. You don't know. We've had this conversation 100 times. You know, no, no. I'm not doing this again. You tell me what you did. Was it? What? No, Phil. No. 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 I'm going to get some air.
Claire.
No. Don't follow me.
Happy Valenbirth anniversary.
Did you know that when you're making small talk with someone and they ask you what you've been up to and you can't come up with a single thing and your mind is spiraling, that means that you don't have friends and that you don't really have anything going on with your life and you're probably poor.
She would critique my painting. And if I, our male cat, I'm having random grabs for my brain. Our male cat protests by marking. He pees. And usually he pees by a window. He looks outside, he sees something threatening to him. I don't know why he pees on the second floor, but when he does pee on the second floor, he pees on a curtain, on a floor-to-ceiling curtain, at the bottom of the curtain. And what I'll do is I will, when my wife's not home, I will take them off and I will wash them. Because I don't want to live in a toilet. The smell doesn't bother me as much as it should, but that's probably because of the remnants of COVID. More on that later. Coming up in just seconds. I wash the curtains, and I put them back up, and I may or may not tell her I did it while she was gone, because it will invite an inspection. Oh, the curtain shrank. What did you do, throw it in the dryer? Now, if I hadn't told her about it, she'd never notice, because the curtains don't shrink. Why? Because I wash them in cold water, because I don't feel like reading that damn label. And then I hang them on a clothesline. I don't put them in the dryer, because I also have this wacky thought that if it's cat pee at the bottom of the curtain, even after it's washed, if I put it in a heated dryer, it might like bake it in. That's just my insanity. I am therefore very grateful when my wife goes away for a week. Oh, isn't it a burden on you to have to take care of the kid? No, no, no. It's great. It's no problem. It's no problem at all. Don't mind it.
Okay, boomer.
For the last time, I am not a boomer. I am Generation X. We are the coolest generation. We know how to give change without a computer. We use paper. We are analog. We are the last golden generation. Don't call me boomer. I hate that. Uncle Marion is a boomer. Thank you.
When I'm in a store and I can choose email, print, I always choose print. Print that receipt. Walter M. Sterling, that's who I am. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
It's Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. There's nothing better on the radio between here and Kosovo. It's Sterling every damn night. If you want brilliant insight and don't mind some hindsight, then you've got to catch this show. So tell all your friends to get off their rear ends and put on the radio. It's Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. He's strong to the finish, like Dennis Kucinich. It's Sterling every damn night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for microwave meditations. Every day, when you put your coffee cup, teacup, hot chocolate cup in the microwave, it spins around on that glass carousel. Where it lands determines your fortune for the day. If it's way at the back and you can't see it from the front, bad day. If it's right up front and the handle's pointing at you, you're going to have a fantastic day. Oh, here it comes. Here it is. Let's grab it. Open it up. How's it look? Every time you put a cup in the microwave from now on, you're going to think of this moment. And you're going to realize it's true. Like that black box in the movie Dune, where he puts his hand in there and have unspeakable pain. You could have unspeakable pain when you cannot see the cup in the back of the microwave. It could be one of those coffee mugs that conducts heat. And that's, I put in the wrong mug. Or it could be the one who doesn't conduct heat. And then you know you're going to have a pretty good day. But if you can't see it, it's not going to be a great day. It might be an okay day. It has to be right up front with the handle pointed towards you. That's the universe's way of saying to you, congratulations, enjoy your drink, have a great day. Microwave meditations. Question for you. Why is it so damn hard to buy a car? It has not gotten easier. I have a friend who decided that on Friday that their car was not working. They had to drive to Atlanta. I don't know why anybody would want to go to Atlanta, but they had to drive to Atlanta. When I'm on WSB, I'll say nice things. I used to be on WSB, and I said very nice things about Atlanta, about the endless traffic jams, driving around in a big circle thinking you've gotten somewhere. Yeah, I got it all. But now I'm not on WSB. We will be again because Ken Charles has a sense of humor. God bless you, Ken Charles. You're not as funny as Michael Ewing, Paul Vandenberg. Greg Stocker, Steve Moore, Bill White, Phil Zachary at WGAN. At WGAN in Maine. How's that governor doing in Maine? Has she apologized yet? Is all federal financing cut off to her? That's what I thought. And our friend at KGGF in Coffeyville, Kansas. Amazing talent. Brilliant guy. Anyway, so our friend was going to drive from Philadelphia to Atlanta. Drive from Philadelphia to Atlanta. And they realized that their car was falling apart. They weren't going to make it. And they decided on Friday night to buy a new car. 2 hours later, and they had money and good credit, not like me. They have money and good credit. 2 hours later, I'm just texted to see, do you have your car yet? No, it takes forever. Why does it take forever? If you and I have $50,000, $60,000, or that kind of credit, no problem. We should be able to go in like it's a supermarket and say, I want that car, and drive away with it right away. New car. The new cars seem to take much longer to get out of there than the used car. New cars, they often say, come back tomorrow. Why should I have to come back tomorrow? We have to prepare it. No, it just came out of a giant factory. It was just driven onto a carrier truck. And it drove off the carrier truck, and it's sitting in your parking lot outside. Thanks for garaging the vehicle. Outside it sits. Why is it so hard to buy a new car? It is the most complicated thing. I bought a new minivan, a Chrysler minivan, a couple years ago in Queens, New York. And I swear to God, it was like the old-fashioned car buying experience. I had to go there like three times. And they always do the same con, all car dealerships. You call them up, say, I see you have this car. I want to buy it. How much is the out-the-door price? Now, that's a very important thing to say to a car dealer. Then they know you're on to them. I want to know the out-the-door price, OTD price, which means they have to tell you everything. And you can challenge many of the add-ons, like dealer prep. Why do I have to pay for you to get the car in shape to sell to me? You're going to get the car into shape to benefit a sale to me. It's baloney. Most of their profit, I swear, must be in dealer prep. Let's hear from a car dealer on how to buy a car.
Never say if you're driving a new or used car on your test drive, oh God, I really love this car, because, well, the price of ownership just went way up. Another thing you should never say to the car dealer is, well, I don't really care what my payment is. Payment's irrelevant to me. You know, as long as you can keep me under $800 a month, I'm good to go. Guess what? They'll keep you somewhere around $850, and you're going to love it. And the third thing you never say to a dealer is, well, you know what? I think I'd go home in this car today if, I don't know, you don't charge me more than $3,000 or $4,000 over MSRP. You know, because I understand that there's a shortage of cars right now. Guess what? There really isn't, and you really shouldn't agree to pay that.
All right, here's my phone number, and I'd like to hear from you about your opinion on why is it so damn hard to buy a car? It's still not easy. I hear all those conversations about, well, we'll come and pick up your old car and bring you your new car right to your home. There's a lot of asterisks under that ad. Too many asterisks. 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. This car buy, and it's going to be worse. Next month, in the spring, in April and May, the big car buying months, it's going to get worse. I don't know why it's so hard to buy a car. And I don't know why it's so difficult to get credit to buy a car when it's secured. This is a secure loan. Hi, here's the car. It should be easier than buying a house. But the horror stories of buying a car, just they're inexcusable. And when they say, well, you know, the price that's here is what's the price that's listed, blah, blah, blah. No, I'd like to be able to negotiate that price. When they present to us that the price of the car is the price that's advertised, and we're supposed to take that as really good news. No, it's really good news for them, because it means that that's the price and you and I can't negotiate it. We can't get it lower. And somehow that's a convenience for me. It It just stinks. But the paperwork, the time, the scary credit guy, the scary credit manager. I bought this Chrysler in Queens, and I never saw a salesman. I never saw the manager. I was immediately shipped to the credit manager, who, by the way, isn't here on Mondays, and wore a sleazy pink shirt and a sleazy rayon tie and had way too many pieces of paper on his desk. The whole thing just sucked. I'm Walter M. Sterling. My number is 855-839-1210 from Sterling Every Damn Night.
Talking jack, bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about a mob hit that was a little close to home. So in the mid-90s, I rented a basement apartment. It was a three-story brick house that sat across from the approach to the Whitestone Bridge. My buddy, who was also a cop, lived there with his mother-in-law and his family. It was a nice place in a quiet neighborhood, but the fly in the ointment was parking, as often when if I worked overtime, I had to park a couple of blocks away to get to my apartment. Now, I lived there for a couple of years until an apartment in my aunt's building became available, and then I moved out. Well, a couple of years later, an event would take place that would shake me to my core. Powerful Bonanno acting crime boss Vincent Vinnie Gorgeous Bastiano led a hit team that gunned down Frank Santoro on a Bronx street on February 15, 2001, which was right next door to where I used to live. My buddy, who was still a cop at the time, lives next door. He comes home that night and surprised to see cops and detectives and half his block roped off in crime scene tape. So he spots a sergeant that he knows that works in Bronx Homicide, and he asks him, "Sarge, is everything all right?" And the sergeant points down at the guy who's covered up in a sheet, and he goes, "Not for him." So my buddy says, "Well, you know, I live next door. Is everything okay?" And the sergeant's like, "Nah, everything's fine. Looks like a mob hit. Nothing to worry about." And the sergeant goes back to writing in his notepad. So my buddy goes into his building, and he's relieved. Now, he didn't know the deceased. He saw the guy walking his dog a couple of times, but they never interacted. Now, despite his neighbor dying in a hail of gunfire next door, my friend didn't see the need to pack up and move. It was a mob hit. People with common interests settling a score. The odds of that happening again in front of his house equaled a lightning strike. Didn't concern him, so he moved on with his life. So when he and I were talking about that, I says, "You know, can you imagine if you and I went out one night, we were coming home together, and we seen this gun battle going on in front of your house? We probably would have gotten involved in it." And the average off-duty police officer carries a firearm. It's an insurance policy with a high deductible you hope you never have to use. Unlike the movies, cops don't go looking for trouble in their spare time. Well, on August 6, 2008, Anthony Indelicato, Anthony Donato, and Dominic Sicali pled guilty to their participation in the murder of Frank Santoro. They received sentences of 25 years, 20 years, and 10 years in federal prison. And then on July of 2011, Vincent Vinnie Bastiano received a life sentence for his part in the murder. So even if you're a cop and you're off duty, you got to be careful where you live, because you never know what'll jump off. So for more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD Presumption and Dysfunction.
Now, join lesbians in space.
Your future husband is never going to be the guy.
Thank God for that. You're right. My future husband is never going to be the guy. He's never going to be anything, actually. Because I'm gay.
Selling every damn night.
It's Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. There's nothing better on the radio between here and Kosovo. It's Sterling every damn night. If you want brilliant insight and don't mind some hindsight, then you've got to catch this show. So tell all your friends to get off their rear ends and put on the radio. It's Sterling every damn night.
Wake up!
It's Sterling every damn night. He's strong to the finish, like Dennis Kucinich. It's Sterling every damn night.
But that is the question. Why is it so damn hard to buy a car? And I found this amazing tip was surprisingly, like, scary and useful.
Today I'll show you one of the biggest scams in used car sales. Disreputable used car lots will advertise a car on Craigslist or Facebook, but they'll have a private individual pretending it's their car. So demand to see the title like this. It shows that I'm the present owner and that the previous owner was Robert and Carol Martin. If the present owner isn't the same name as the person selling you the car, run away! So people might say, what's in the name? Well, the name on the title, there's a lot in that.
When I buy a used car, I don't early in the process want to see the title. Do you? I want to see the car. I want to drive it around the block. I want to pretend like I know something about mechanics, none of which is true. And have you ever actually done what you should do? Have I ever done what I should do, which is bring a mechanic with me to ask questions? Now, why don't I do that? I don't have any buddies who are mechanics. Anybody who I'd ask to come with me because they are a mechanic would be somebody I'd have to pay for their time. I don't mind paying somebody for their time, but I'm in radio, and therefore I have no money. And I have three daughters. If I had any extra money, they would have already taken it. They would have already gone through my pockets before I woke up. The science of having daughters. But this is a mystery to me. No matter how long I have been buying cars or been able to drive, it never seems to get easier to buy a car. It always seems to be many hoops, many hurdles, many conversations. And the biggest scam that every one of those dealers runs is you call them up. Hey, I'd like the price for this. I'd like to know how much this costs. Do you still have the car? Well, come on down. We want you to come on down. Show us what you want. Get in the car. Feel it. They always want me to come down. When I get food from Walmart, I can just order that, and I don't have to handle the box. I don't have to pick up the gallon of soda. I can just have it sent to my home. Why can't we do that with cars? If I have less than perfect credit, and I'm in show business, and therefore I do, why is it more complicated for me? And it shouldn't be for you either. Sterling every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
And now, to the great embarrassment of Dr. Dave Iser, weather. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the great Canadian Dave Scott, an expert on all things UFOs, metaphysics, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and other scary things. Dave Scott, live in Canada, host of Spaced Out Radio, which you can hear every episode he's ever done on YouTube, or you can listen to him in Canada on great Canadian radio stations. He has a beautiful website where you can get Spaced Out Radio merch. I happen to have a great coffee. Is it a coffee mug? What is it? A water cooler? What do you call it?
I think it's more like a tumbler.
Sorry,
tumbler.
Tumbler.
Yeah.
It's a great tumbler and a magnificent T-shirt. Dave Scott, there was a lot of big news this week, a lot of big UFO news. There was a sighting of UFOs, and there's also that news about what's underneath the Pyramid of Giza. Have you seen that news?
Yeah, that one is a little bit weird. I mean, there's still a lot of information going on, but somehow archaeologists were able to put some sort of radar, ground-penetrating radar, into the ground, and they actually found that there were pillars underneath, or what they believe are pillars, underneath the pyramids. Now, whether the pyramids are being held up by these, or these were just some sort of archaeological dig for the pharaohs, we really don't know. We don't know how long they are. We don't know a lot about them. But, I mean, you know, the pyramids in Egypt especially are the gift that keeps on giving. Just when we think we've solved something, something more pops up.
I believe that after 125 years of knowing about the pyramids in modern times, with Einstein, Tesla, Edison, hundreds of archaeologists studying it, and they all ask the same questions. Who built them? How were they built? How were they built? When were they built? And none of them have agreed on an answer. None of them. And then that Ziggy Hawass confusing everything, the former head of the Ministry of Antiquities in Egypt, saying, "No, these were my ancestors. No need to investigate. These were my ancestors." That's all he ever would say. But nobody could agree. And therefore, we don't know. And the reason we don't know is we can't know. And that is because we're looking in the wrong place. We're looking at 4,000 years ago. Instead, the evidence is far more overwhelming that this was more like 12,000 years ago. And 12,000 years ago would explain everything. Oh, it was a different civilization. They had all the equipment. They had all the capability. The fact that to this moment, in modern times, viewing at it at a 4,000-year-old time frame, we can't figure out how they lifted a 4-ton block. We don't have a clue. Every single expert has a different answer. That means there is no answer. That means we're just guessing. But at this time, we should not be guessing anymore. The answer should be clear to us based on modern scenarios. Well, no modern scenario can build it. Nothing we've tried can replicate it. Therefore, we can't replicate it because it was a technology from 10,000 years ago. And then I'll shut up. The dumbest thing I ever saw Ziggy Hawass ever do, claiming, you know, we have to go on science. Don't listen to these New Agers. These New Agers, don't listen to the New Agers. And then we see him in a tunnel in the pyramid, on his knees, leaning against one of these blocks, these 4-ton blocks, touching it and saying, "Yes, yes, I can feel the hands of my ancestors on these blocks." That's your science? You can feel the hands of your ancestors on these blocks? That's your proof? I can feel my ancestors. We don't have a clue.
We don't. We really do not have a clue of what's going on, how we're getting there, where we're going. Everything like that, Walter. And you know, the idea that we are trying to claim that we have knowledge, it just goes to show, just with anything, we think we know, we brag about what we know, we say we're done, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, these giant pillars are found, and it kind of throws everything into a bottle of wax. But it also makes you wonder, Walter, you know, how much or what was the technology like back then? Because they obviously had some sort of technology that they could use that we don't have or haven't figured out with our modern day science.
Well, I say in the time frame of 4,000 years ago, they didn't have it either. We're looking in the wrong spot. They didn't have it either. What they did is they slapped their logos, their language on structures they found. And the final clue that they didn't have any idea how to build those, and they did not build those 4,000 years ago, is an astonishing thing that Cleopatra, the last ruler of ancient Egypt, said. Cleopatra looked around at her minions and said, "Would somebody please find out who built these and how did they build them?" She sent her archaeologists on a mission to find out how they were built. And I'm like, whoa. You're the last ruler of ancient Egypt? Surely, if your people built these, it was passed down. Somebody made a note. She didn't know. Well, how could she not know? Something so monumental, so spectacular, wasn't passed down from ruler to ruler to ruler. And by the way, on those columns that they saw underneath it, they are wrapped in a coil. Did you hear that? They're wrapped in a coil.
I did.
It's amazing. Annoyed you. So please, Dave Scott in Canada, what updates do you have for us?
Well, first off, you haven't annoyed me whatsoever. I mean, this is fascinating this. So, you know, I mean, I just want to know how it was built. Like, there's got to be a set of IKEA directions on this somewhere.
That might be. Maybe we should just ask the people of IKEA.
IKEA directions?
You know what? That's a great bit. Listen, Dave Scott, that's a great bit. We should call IKEA and ask them how were the pyramids built. We should do that.
Oh, absolutely we should, because you know, I really do believe that there is something to that. How we wonder. Walter, there is some updated Canadian news in the UFO front here. I don't know if any of your American listeners actually know or not, but Canada is planning on going to election. An election has been called federally here in Canada for April 28th. Now, how does this tie into the UFO world? Well, that's simple, because member of Parliament Larry Maguire, who would be like a congressperson if we were looking in the U.S. side of things, he has been the one championing the UFO story and getting a Sky Canada project off the ground and bringing the UFO subject to the members of Parliament. And in fact, it was about 4 years ago that I actually introduced Larry Maguire to many people within the United States UFO story that were tied to the Pentagon. And I don't know the ramifications of that conversation. I was not privy to it. I just know I helped set it up. And long story short, Maguire has decided not to run for political office. He's 70 years old. He wants to go back to the farm. He wants to be a grandpa. He wants to be a dad to his daughters and a husband to his wife again. And so now the big question in Canada is, who's going to carry the ball? Or is there going to be somebody else who takes over? Or do they have a job for Larry to continue his work within the UFO story? This is going to be very intriguing, because now that he's going to be a free man as of April 28th, could he now become a UFO researcher full time? So politically, we still have not seen the Sky Canada project come out, which is Canada's version of the UFO program put together by scientist Dr. Bowden Meever. And we don't know now if that'll ever come out.
Well, why don't you think it'll ever come out? What change is going to make sure that it doesn't come out? What's your feeling?
Well, my feeling on it is that this government, whatever happens in the Canadian election, if the Liberal government, now run by unelected Prime Minister Mark Carney, gets reelected, then they have not touched the UFO story at all. Now, if Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservatives, gets elected, it would mean that there is so much more going on right now in Canada with identity politics, with the economy, with tariffs, with the strained relationship with Donald Trump. He's got a lot of band-aids put on, and this is just going to kick the UFO story down the ladder even more.
Right. That's amazing. When's the election in a month? 6 weeks?
1 month today. It's not like the United States where you have about a year and a half run-up to an election. Up here, when they call an election, you have 4 to 8 weeks. We're going to have 4 weeks of government hobnobbing, and then from there it's election time. People will go to the polls, and hopefully we get a change in government.
It's one of the flaws in our system that the campaign can run a year and a half, and that the primaries aren't all on the same day. They need to all be on the same day, just like the general election is. And how is your family, Mr. Scott?
My family is great. I got my grandson up here for the few days. My daughter is back home visiting. My son is on spring break. And, you know, in order to start spring off like we've had 2 days of snow.
Congratulations. Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio in Canada. You go to YouTube. You can see his, you can see and hear his great radio show. He is the expert on all things UFO, metaphysical, Bigfoot, scary stuff, great stories, brilliant storyteller. Dave Scott, thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn night. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's about 20 past the hour. My Midnight Misfits welcome. Sterling every damn night.
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling Shop.
This happened at an amazing Walmart in Acworth, Georgia. And I'll give you the address. It just says Georgia. 3105 Cobb Parkway. So mother in there and doing some shopping. She got herself a kid there. And she's going through the Walmart. And she's in the medicine aisle. And an older gentleman came up and said, "Hey, do you know something about Tylenol?" This woman, of course, explained everything about Tylenol, because women know about those things. And then the man tried to make a break with her child to run out the Walmart. He was caught. He was arrested. 56-year-old guy from Kennesaw. Kennesaw. And the feller's name is Mahendra Patel. Mahendra Patel, simple assault, misdemeanor, simple battery, also a misdemeanor, kidnapping, a felony. This happened just on Friday. When you go shopping, even at Walmart with their amazing associates and loss prevention experts and the cops that are seemingly there all the time, you never know who you're going to run into. Mahendra, well, he wanted to steal a child. It also goes into this fact, if you're going to commit a crime, have a plan of escape. This feller, he had the idea he wanted to steal a child, he found a child he wanted to take, yet he was unable to abscond with the child due to lack of planning. Well, we do not condone the stealing of children here on Sterling Every Damn Night. Don't condone it at all. We're also interested in why these crimes fail, and it's probably for the best they do. But this feller didn't have a plan. For the people of Walmart, this is Vila Hool, Sterling every damn night.
Welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. What? Yes, he's live. I'm live. Live. American women are giving up on marriage. And there's good news for American men. Stories of women complaining about the lack of quality men have long been a staple of... No. Stories of women complaining about the lack of quality men have long been a staple of pop culture, from Jane Austen to Taylor Swift. Yet women throughout history rarely questioned whether securing a partner should be a primary goal of adulthood. This seems to be changing. Over half of single women said they believe they were happier than their married counterparts. There was a 2024 survey of 5,800 adults. Just over a third of single men said the same. The shift marks a response to major demographic shifts, including growing gender gaps in economic and educational attainment, political affiliation, and family preferences. The odds of being happily married are well established. It's 50-50. Half of all marriages end in divorce. In my humble opinion, which is not humble because I am a talk show host, Walter M. Sterling every damn night. I am a talk show host. And as such, I have a very clear and educated radio fact opinion. The reason half of all marriages fail is not because he was a jerk or she was a jerk. Is not because that was the wrong person. It's because you got married at the wrong time. And the wrong time is before the marriage clock clicks off. You and I have a marriage clock. And if we get married before that clock says it's time, the marriage will fail, no matter who you marry. If you wait until it's like, oh, yeah, no problem, it's time to get married, and you have no hesitation, no doubt that it's the right time to get married, your marriage will succeed pretty much no matter who you marry, unless there's abuse. Let me be clear. If either partner abuses the other partner psychologically or physically, you run like hell. You just run like hell, and there's no excuse to stay in that relationship one extra day. Not one extra day. And every day a person stays in an abusive marriage, they get number and number and number and make up more and more insane excuses for staying in it. If a person keeps making up excuses for staying in a marriage where you go, really? And they keep making up excuses and it goes further and further away from logic, well, they're stuck. They're in an abusive relationship. Otherwise, the reason half the marriages fail is because they got married before their clock went off. And if you wait until you're sure, there's no doubt in your mind, oh yeah, this will be great, this will be fine. The problems, yeah, we'll work it out. You will work it out because it's time. Walter M. Sterling, and the name of this show is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling Every Damn Night. Midnight Misfits Unite. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Can you believe you're driving the 18-wheeler, Route 80, up and down I-4, the 101, I-5, here we are. It's just you and me. It's just us. This is the sweetest time of day to be driving. The temperature in the car or the cab is just right. There's that magic glow off the dashboard where you've been able to adjust it to exactly your preference, not the other people who drive it, your preference. You got it just right. Snack next to us. I have the strangest cravings when I drive long distance. I never eat it at any other time. I get those, what's the brand? It's not Nabisco. I get these crackers, the peanut butter crackers. I get the peanut butter crackers and a Diet Coke, and that's what I eat. And I'm really happy. And Frito-Lay corn chips. I never eat corn chips any other time except on long-distance drives. So I eat the salt. I got the Diet Coke. I'm really happy. I'm incredibly happy when I'm alone in that car driving forever. And the executive order that I am waiting for from our great president, what I'm waiting for, you see, if I drink something, my voice gets much deeper. This is my national radio spot voice, Mazda. Mazda. But I digress. What was I going to say? It was something really important. Well, anyway. Here's the, it wasn't that important. All right. There's a horrible story that came out of Virginia where a school district was very upset. Parents in a school district were very upset where one of the ways they were teaching children the history of the South was they wanted these school children to pass around and touch cotton. cotton plants. They passed around cotton plants in the school. And for some reason, some parents were very upset that they were being forced to touch cotton. And I'm looking at the video that a TV station put out for this video showing kids touching cotton, being forced to touch cotton, and the parents were justifiably upset and concerned. But then I'm looking at the bottom of the frame of this video put out by a TV station, and who was sponsoring this? Who was sponsoring this video?
Mr. Bojangles.
Bojangles Chicken was the sponsor of the video about kids being forced to touch cotton as part of their history lesson. I just found that many layers of wrong. Really just many layers of wrong. All right, now, I've been meaning to tell you this for an hour. I'm sorry. JB Bakery. Every week, Stephen of JB Bakery gives us a recipe. Now, the reason his recipes are good is because, first of all, there are lots of pictures. I need lots of pictures. Secondly, the recipes are easy. He's come out with a recipe for French toast bread. French toast bread. Magnificent. Tastes great. All you have to do is send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. Live. It's a live radio show. Sterling every damn night. It's a live radio show. Hi. Nice to see you. 20 minutes before the hour. And but he's put out this recipe. It shows pictures of the finished product, him and his girlfriend, Selena, the bakery, and the all the steps. Very easy to follow. If you want Stephen the Baker's recipe for French toast bread, just ask me for it. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And also, you should get the decoder card. The decoder card will make it possible for you to actually decode my secret messages that I give out on many of the shows. Go to WalterSterlingShow.com. WalterSterlingShow.com. And there you click Midnight Misfits. Download your decoder card. Tells you what you got to do as a misfit. Tells you what I expect as a misfit. And how you fit in to being a misfit. Plus the decoder card. That's everything you need to know. Doesn't that feel good? Of course it does. Of course it does. Why does... Oh, I know why that doesn't work. See, every time I try to, like, do something, it never works out. I should never try to do anything. Let's see. Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
Terry, I'll show you one of the biggest...
We already heard from this guy. What is it that I'm looking for? Let's see. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go eat some chicken parm. I got to go.
Chicken parm?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What's your love language? I'm like, what? She's like, you know, your love language. Like, how do you convey love to your partners and loved ones? Like, for example, a love language could be words of affirmation. Like, words of affirmation? I was raised by Asian parents. I've never heard one word of affirmation in my life. Nobody ever told me, Jimmy, you're so great, you can do it. They're like, don't get up. Their love language is verbal abuse.
He took me camping recently, though, and camping is stupid. You go outside, and then you do all this work to make it feel like you're still inside. We brought a stove to the woods, and we have a better one at home. We're just trading in all our stuff for worse versions of it. Why?
I don't know. I never would go camping. When I was a Boy Scout, When I was a Boy Scout, we had to, like, go camping, and we'd do, like, a 5-mile hike. I never made that. I made a 1 mile hike, maybe. Feet hurt like hell. But the problem with camping and the problem with hiking is always the same for me. I never dress right. Because let's say it's 55 degrees and I start dressing for 55 degrees and then I start hiking. The minute I start hiking, all those clothes are too warm. By the time I'm quarter of a mile, it's 95 degrees. And then what happens? Then I have to start to take off clothes. Where do I put them? Well, then I have to carry the clothes. And my mother in my mind is going, you can't throw them away, because my instinct is I'll throw them away. I have other shirts. It's just all horrible. And then when people, like, their goal is to be a marathon runner, my goal is to be a marathon napper. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late-night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, A Flame Among the Stars. Despite the darkness, Solyndra's round eyes glittered in the wan moonbeams. Treat me like I'm any other woman who happened to cross your path and attracted your attention. Meg let out a nervous chuckle, ruffling the hair at the side of her head. Careful there. You might not know what you're getting yourself into. Is that a warning or a promise? She swallowed back a groan as Solyndra's coy remarks threatened to tear away all her reasons for resisting. Still, the doubts lingering at the back of her mind made her hesitate. I have to ask, she said. And if you tell any of the others, Ronan especially, about this rare, vulnerable moment of mine, I don't know what I'll do, but I'll come up with some sort of retribution soon enough. She tilted her head forward, her loose waves settling around her face into flawless frame. I'm listening. Meg inhaled a deep breath, then let it out. Why me? She finally said. With everyone you've ever come across, from the staff at the castle to visitors from far-off lands, why are you interested in an insignificant peasant from a village that doesn't even have a name? Solyndra crossed her arms in mock irritation. I thought we'd been over this. From the moment we met, you were friendly and kind to me, even before you knew my true identity. You invited me, a stranger, to join you, even giving me your sister's boots to make sure I'd be comfortable. She kicked at a tree root. It's not like anyone else was using them at the moment, she mumbled. Then, no matter what's happened since, you always know exactly what to do or say. I wish I could be half as smart and perceptive as you. And I still think you're crazy for saying so. Her gaze remained glued to the ground, her next words barely audible in the thick forest. I'm really not as special as you make me out to be. What else do I need to do to convince you? Dark red lips curved down into an alluring pout. Fine, I'll keep going then. I like the way your hair always looks so wild, like you've spent the whole day running through the wind on another adventure. I'm fascinated by how the color of your eyes shifts with the light, from calm seas to stormy skies. And whenever I see your smile, not like when you're fooling around with your friends, but the real one, I can't help but feel happy too. Okay, enough. Fire burned in Meg's cheeks, and she hoped the shadows would help camouflage it. You're making me all flustered. Oh? Solyndra tapped her chin, pretending to study her. I didn't think anything ever flustered you, Meg. How interesting. She tried to laugh, though it came out as more of a snort. So, putting aside all the flattery, where does this leave us? Well... Leaning against the tree, she tossed her hair back, letting the starlight illuminate her face. Based on our conversation last night, and everything since, I think you owe me a kiss. Meg's heart skipped a beat, but before she could respond, Solyndra straightened, her air of self-assurance replaced by a perplexed expression. Is this how these things are supposed to go? She whispered. The words sounded pretty good in my head, but now I'm not so sure. She couldn't stop the corners of her mouth from turning up in what she assumed was one of the aforementioned genuine smiles. It was perfect. Stepping forward, she closed the gap between them. As Solyndra gazed at her with her striking green eyes, she felt an obligation to make this kiss memorable. Reaching up, Meg caressed the side of her face, her thumb tracing the contour of her cheekbone. With gentle pressure, she tilted her chin upward and brought her mouth to hers, letting it hover in place for a brief yet endless moment before coming in contact with her. Soft lips welcomed her, parting when she snaked her tongue forward. The taste of her made Meg's knees tremble, and she sought to explore her mouth in detail. With every advance, Solyndra's tongue engaged her with a playful swirl, eager to probe into her in return. Meg buried her fingers in her silky hair, holding her tight. Her other hand meandered lower to rest at her waist, and her imagination went into overdrive, fantasizing about what lay beneath her heavy layers of clothing. Solyndra enhanced the vivid images by gripping her shoulders and pulling her closer. With a sturdy tree behind her, their bodies flattened together, and Meg had to resist the temptation to tear her cloak off of her. She reminded herself to be patient, however, and settled for losing herself to their blazing kiss. Unfortunately, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, A Flame Among the Stars, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Woman, there really is nothing more cosmically disappointing than ending up with a straight man. It's like winning the lottery and then donating all the money to a men's rights organization.
Now, join the lesbians in space.
And I love that my sister married a woman because she dated men her whole life. So it was really fun to watch my parents malfunction.